Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon. Today is Friday, June 14th, and welcome to another episode of Bare Benevolence. Did you know that same-sex couples have more money than their straight counterparts? According to a recent article in the Chronicle of Philanthropy, same-sex couples are more likely than straight couples to live in higher median households with two incomes and no dependent children. During the first annual Give Out Day, a 24-hour online give-a-thon fueled by the Razoo Foundation, more than $550,000 was raised from individual donors to support LGBTQ nonprofit organizations. For fundraisers, it seems that people who identify as LGBT are now viewed as a viable population from which to raise much-needed charitable dollars. With this in mind, should fundraisers now devise a specific strategy to appeal to this group? Turns out, many fundraisers are considering this very question. In the same Chronicle of Philanthropy article, Jen Myers, Director of Development of Family Equality Council, believes a different donor strategy isn't necessarily needed. Instead, cultural competency is the missing link for many organizations in reaching out to LGBT individuals. The UJA Federation of New York, however, is making strides in ensuring that LGBT folks consider them in their giving portfolio. For example, UJA recently created an LGBT advisory group, is hiring more LGBT staff members, is planning to hold an educational series on LGBT issues, and is celebrating Gay Pride Month, all under the guise of appealing to LGBT donors. As endearing as this may be, is this really the way to go in reaching out to diverse groups of donors? Is simply implementing a whole set of culturally competent activities enough to engage diverse groups in your cause for the long run? Truth be told, the practice of appealing to different groups of donors is nothing new, and for good reason. Recent projections from the 2010 U.S. Census point to the year 2043, when our nation will become a majority-minority racially. What this means is that no particular racial group will be able to claim that there is more of them than the rest of us. America's melting pot is finally coming to a full boil. With this in mind, let me say that I wholeheartedly agree that diversity must be taken into account when considering who your donors are. Because historically, white people have been the targets of donor cultivation. People of color, on the other hand, have been viewed as the main recipients of nonprofit services and therefore are unable to give back financially. Those asking for financial support have also been overwhelmingly white. According to the report, Underdeveloped, a national study of challenges facing nonprofit fundraising, which was conducted by Compass Point and the Evelyn and Walter Haas Jr. Fund in San Francisco, development directors are predominantly over 40, white, and female. This is also reflective of most nonprofit executive directors. What this means is that there is a tendency to overlook diversity when it comes to fundraising for many nonprofits. While this tendency may not be on purpose, it still needs to be addressed in the long run. The Giving Institute produces an annual report called Giving USA, which highlights the charitable habits of our nation. Year after year, individual donors top the chart when it comes to the main source of nonprofit donations. For example, in 2011, individuals provided over $217 million in donations. This is 73% of all donations given in 2011. If nonprofits want to stick around for the long haul, careful attention must be made to who your donors might be. Scores of books have been written on how to engage a whole host of donors. From Cultivating Diversity and Fundraising by Janice Galpetti, which I have, to Diana S. Newman's book, Opening Doors, Pathways to Diverse Donors, there is much to say and read on how best to nurture philanthropy in an increasingly multicultural society. While these publications are a good place to start in understanding diverse groups, I believe it is an irresponsible and frankly lazy strategy for donor cultivation. As in life, stereotyping rarely works in getting what you want. Case in point, New York marketing consultant Diana Cardenas shared her mistakes in engaging diverse donors in supporting a charitable initiative as detailed in a July 13, 2012 Chronicle of Philanthropy article. Ms. Cardenas, a Colombian by birth, recalled her attempts to engage Colombian business owners in Queens and donating to educational programs back in their home country of Colombia. She offered a discount coupon to an upscale store in Manhattan, telling the business owners that a portion of the proceeds would benefit educational programs. Turns out, the business owners never shopped at that store, and some were even insulted at the gesture that their primary focus would be on shopping when they have families at home to support. Ms. Cardenas realized that her shared ethnicity was not enough, and that assuming that you understand a donor without actually asking them what they care about is nothing more than a major fail. This warning can also be applied when we consider engaging the millennial generation. Millennials are described as those young people born between 1982 in 1993. Young bucks, if you ask me. As coveted as young age is to many, this particular group gets absolutely no love. According to the May 9, 2013 Time Magazine cover story titled Millennials, the Me Generation, those belonging to this cohort are labeled as lazy, narcissistic, coddled, and imbued with a deep sense of entitlement. I would argue that so are babies, but hey, we still coochie coo in their faces, now don't we? Millennials are also known for their short attention span, confidence, and deep penchant for all things social media. At first glance, these broad generalizations might result in two very different scenarios. One, a fundraiser might look at these attributes and ignore the giving power of millennials. They're selfless, remember? In the other scenario, using the culturally competent method of donor cultivation, a fundraiser might simply just create a Facebook and Twitter account hoping to engage the millennial generation where they are. In both instances, the fundraiser is likely to leave a significant amount of money on the table. Because unless you understand why people give in the first place, external characteristics are irrelevant in the end. Plenty of research has been done to understand the motivation behind charitable giving. In a study conducted by the Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University, the top five motivations for why people give are 1. To meet critical, basic needs. 2. To give back to society by improving another's quality of life. 3. To help those with less than you have. 4. To bring about a specific outcome. And 5, to give because you've been asked. Because I love simplicity, we can go ahead and file these 5 reasons under the umbrella that is altruism. By definition, altruism is the principle or practice of unselfish concern for or devotion to the welfare of others. Altruism is also synonymous with philanthropy, the love of humanity. This is what ultimately motivates people to give, and is the thread that links all donors together, despite their physical and cultural characteristics. Nonprofits are in the business of selling dreams. Dreams of a better world where humans are treated equally, have enough to eat and drink, and can meaningfully contribute to the advancement of all. Social justice organizations not only resonate with people of color. Arts organizations are not just for hipsters and buppies. Rather than relying solely on demographic labels to tweak the way in which you engage donors, consider investing more energy in ensuring that your nonprofit is the best at what it does. Strengthen the way in which you do your programs. Ensure that those you serve have everything they need. The work you put in will undeniably radiate and resonate with a variety of donors. This is the real reason why donors will support your work in the long run. As a seasoned fundraiser once told me, people fund people, not paper. Well, folks, that's all the time I have for today. If you would like to keep the conversation going, go ahead and share this podcast with your friends on Twitter and Facebook. You can also contact me directly through my website at tamarcloydconsults.weebly.com. Free fundraising tips are also at your disposal when you subscribe to my monthly blog at fundtimes.wordpress.com. As always, thanks for listening. Cheers.